The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. We've got a good one today. Doug Hughes will be in with us, and so will Hot Rod Holloway. He's going to be calling in just a few minutes to give us a little review of 2017 and a preview of 2018. Off to a good start this year, and actually, Doug joins us now. Hey, Dugger.
Hey, David. How you doing?
Doing fantastic. You know, I was given a hard time by Doug, folks, when I announced to him the first day back after the break that I actually got up and went ice fishing on New Year's Day. A friend of mine organized the tournament. We had about six or seven people out there, including my 17-year-old son, who bravely, took the elements by by the throat and went out there and actually ice fished. It was somewhat crazy. So one of my friends texted. He said, "Does anyone realize it's 16 below zero?" And we were all like, "Yeah, but we're coming anyway." So we had a great time. Doug,
I thought, "Who does this?"
Yeah, who does that?
But actually, there were six or seven.
My son says to me, at one point, "I think I'm going to die." I said, "Go sit in the car for a little bit. It'll be just fine." He went in, sat in the car, and then came back about 30 minutes later. And then he said, "You know, I think you just get to a certain level of cold where you just don't get any colder." And I'm like, "Yeah, maybe so. I'm not sure." But Doug said, "I have no more excuses when he says to me, 'Hayes, let's go fishing.'" And I say, "Well, I can't," or "I don't want to. It's too this, it's too that."
Too windy, said, too rainy, yeah, too you
no,
name it.
It's, no more excuses.
No more excuses.
All right, we're going to have a good one today. Let's do a little news of the week. First of all, brought to you by the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame, of course, sponsored and supported by us at Comprehensive Financial. If you'd like to learn more about the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame, just Google them, Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame, and you can pull up their website and check out all the really cool things. All right, obviously, we've come off a really strong year in the market, no question about it. But I always find it interesting when you look at averages and long-time performances, and the S&P 500 index has gained an average of 10.1% over the last 50 years. The index has been positive for each of the last 9 years. That means that it's been the best streak since 1991 through 1999. That was a pretty good streak. I started in 1994, which kind of was a rough start, made a fall, the fall, but ended up, you know, just nothing but up through the rest of the 90s. You know, if you think about trying to time the market, you know, the split between up and down days for the S&P 500 over the last 50 years, 53% of the days are up, 47% of the days are down. It's really hard to pick them whether they're going to be up or down. In fact, in spite of gaining over 21% in 2017, the S&P 500 performance was, that's what it was last year. It was the eighth best performing year in the last 25 years. But here's what I wanted to say about missing and maybe having been in the best days of the market. This is pretty interesting. The total return again for the S&P was 21%. If you missed the five best trading days, then your gain would have fallen to 15%. Just 5 days. If you would have avoided the worst days, the five worst days, your gain would have been over 30%. Set to 147% of the stocks inside the S&P gained at least 30% in 2017. 51 stocks gained at least 50% in 2017, but 125 stocks actually finished in the red. They finished lower than where they started. So, guys, I'm telling you, it's really difficult to go in there and pick them and pick the right days that you're in the market. And then also small caps, you know, Russell 2000 is a small cap index who I believe could and should benefit mostly from the tax reform that's going through. It finished the year at 14.7%, and its average return over the last 35 years has been 10.2. But Doug, real quick on the news of the week, a lot of market news here, but I think coming off the year we've had, I think you need to put things in perspective from a long-term perspective, and these big runs and up and down days and all of the things that we try to do here on the show just to kind of keep attitudes tempered just a little.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the most important things about investing, and we talk about this over and over again, is time horizon. And when you look at a market that has just had an amazing return in 2017, you need to take a step back, not just look at it and say, I mean, you know, be thankful, great returns, but also take a step back and look at your time horizon and say, okay, how does this impact my time horizon, not just my account balance? And what we mean by time horizon is, what is the objective of the portfolio? How does this relate? Because where people sometimes make mistakes, David, is they have short-term money, and they'll look at with a short-term purpose, but then they'll look at a year like last year when the markets are up 20-plus percent, and they'll say, hey, I'm going to get rid of my short-term money, and I'm going to chase stocks right now. And that could be a big mistake. So I always say to people, there's so many things to think about when the markets have a great year. Take a step back now and look at the repurposing of that money, and maybe you've taken some gains, take them off the table, enjoy them. But don't just confuse and think that this is going to continue on, or if short-term money could be applied to long-term strategies.
Yeah, the question is, are we in this 1996, 97, going to 1999 run, or are we at the 1999 spot? Where are we in this run? We don't have any idea. So you're always looking to build and buy more time horizon, having your now money sitting right in the bank. You have your soon money that's going to be sitting in things that are more safe, and then you have your later money, and that's where you've bought yourself some time horizon. And for the more aggressive you are, that can be shorter. For the more conservative people, that's a little bit longer. But push that out. So money that you have in the market, you shouldn't need for the next 10 years. That's building the time horizon that you need. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Hot Rod will be joining us to give us a little preview of 2017, but more importantly, a review of 2017 and a preview of 2018. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Rod Holloway joins me now on the phone. And Hot Rod, I know that this is the question that everyone asks, is what's going to happen in 2018. But before we get to that, I want to do a little review of 2017. We're coming off a year where the S&P 500 is up over 21%, the Russell 2000 index, which is small cap, over 14, almost 15%. Before you came on, I was talking about the makeup of the S&P 500, how 147 stocks in the S&P gained at least 30%, 51 stocks up over 50%, but yet 125 stocks ended in the red for the entire year. And if you missed just a few days in the market, how much your gain fell off. If you missed some of the bad days in the market, how your gain was even better. So we had a lot of information here that we wanted to digest. And I'm going to have you jump in right now. Looks like Rod had a disconnect, so we're going to give him just a second to reconnect. And I don't even think I have to repeat what I just said to Hot Rod, because he can usually pick right up where I left off mentally. All right, there was a button we forgot to push. No problem. Hey, this is our first time, so you have to forgive us. We have Rob taking care of us today, and he's actually the veteran in the group. So, hey, Rod, are you there?
I am.
All right, man. Hey, I just did a little preview of last year, and I more importantly want to talk about 2018. I mean, obviously, we're off to a really, really good start. The question is, you know, where do we go from here, and what sectors are we looking at this year, especially in light of tax reform? So I know that's a lot to say and talk about in such a little bit of time, but I'll turn you loose on that topic first.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, like you said, it is difficult to make predictions early from a sector perspective, but I think given what's been going on in the economy, where things are at, you know, I think the environment is set up for financials to perform fairly well. I think when you start talking about growth, and growth being cranked up a potential notch with the possible infrastructure bill out there, with the tax reform and all of those things, I think cyclical companies such as industrial look good. And technology, even though technology isn't necessarily a huge benefactor from the tax reform, of course the repatriation at cheaper cost will be a good thing for them. But the reality is, the technology companies also are the areas that have the growth. So even though they may not be a benefactor of anything going on from fiscal or monetary policy, it doesn't change the fact that they are growing companies. They're growing their earnings. They're growing their revenue. And more than likely, right now, they're going to continue to do that. So that's another sector that we like, but that's really due to the underlying fundamentals in that sector, more so than anything that's going on from a tax perspective or even any sort of policies such as an infrastructure plan.
Hi, Rob. When you manage a portfolio, and I know we had some meetings today, and everyone's different, and depending on your age and stage of life, may determine, you know, what type of stocks or what type of equities that you're in. But for the most part, I mean, we typically try to buy kind of a broad mix of things, but then we do, you know, do some satellite positions to give you a little bit of opportunity long term. And looking at the trailing 12-month tax rates for some different sectors, telecom, industrials, consumer discretionaries, consumer staples, you mentioned financials, utilities are another sector, all paid taxes well over that 21% federal tax rate. Some sectors like real estate, materials, or information technology are already under that 21%. So as we look forward to 2018, are you taking some, I don't want to say sector bets, but are you looking to lean a little more towards some of those sectors that have the opportunity to pick up some extra revenue just simply because of the lower tax rates?
Yeah, to a certain degree. I would almost say from our perspective, we're maybe looking a little bit more from a tax perspective of looking for domestic companies that don't already maybe have a lower tax rate due to global, because some of those sectors you mentioned also are going to have a headwind going against them. So telecom, utilities, even though they may have a slightly higher tax rate and they're getting a benefit from that, at the same time as interest rates go up, those are sectors people tend to avoid. So you're going to have a headwind fighting the tailwind in a couple of those sectors. So really more from a tax perspective, what we're looking at, we're looking for opportunities in small and mid-cap, predominantly because a lot of your U.S. small and mid-cap that are listed on the exchanges, they're not typically global companies. They're predominantly domestic. Therefore, they receive the full brunt of the decrease in the tax form on their bottom line, because a lot of the global companies, they already have some of their taxes that are coming in much cheaper because of the overseas earnings that they have and paying less tax over there.
You mentioned this, interest rates going up. I mean, obviously, that's what the assumption is, but, you know, we could be wrong. They could stay the same or go down. But talk about how interest rates affect stock prices. I had Eric take a stab at this last week as well. You know, for the last, I don't know how long, we've been saying that when interest rates are this low, typically you can pay up for earnings on stocks and get into those 20-plus multiples. But if interest rates start to go up, then that may give you a reason to not do that. Can you give us a little bit of insight on if interest rates go up? We talk about bond values going down, but what about stock values?
Yeah, well, typically at the beginning of an increasing interest rate cycle, stock prices tend to continue to appreciate. Now, part of the reason for that is normally the reason you're starting to increase interest rates is you're trying to slow growth down a little bit. You don't want inflation to really take off too much and end up in hyperinflation. So at the beginning of an interest rate cycle increasing, normally stocks do okay. The longer you go in that cycle, the more you have to start looking at certain areas that are impacted by rising interest rates. So what we've had, like you had mentioned, the lower interest rates and when the Fed was down at zero, you had a lot of bond investors that weren't making enough money in retirement off of their income or their investment producing income that now started looking for equity to generate income for them. So there's a tipping point somewhere, and we don't know where it is. It's a guess for everybody, but somewhere, say, around 3 to 4% on the treasury, the 10-year treasury, is the tipping point that everyone has talked about, that once you start to approach that, those old bond investors that have moved to dividend-paying stocks will begin to reverse that trend and start taking the dollars out of the dividend-paying stocks and start redeploying those dollars into fixed-income investments.
And finally, Rod, obviously 2018, we don't know what the black swans are, but we do know of risk out there. And I do want to mention this because, I mean, obviously, folks who have listened to this show a long time know that I really like the research that Harry Dent has put out over the years on demographics and predictable spending patterns and how that affects the economy overall. And where Harry has made the big mistake is that he tried to take that information and make forecasts on exactly where the market's going to go. And Rod, just the good news here is I just saw an article come out from Harry that said 2018 is the year of the bust, and it ended the article to say, to sum it up, 2018 doesn't look good, where there's extreme downside for most investments. And he says if somehow central banks can pull another rabbit out of their hat, then this massive across-the-board crash could hit between 2019 and 2022, which really bodes well for the overall markets, right?
Yeah, for the most part, especially given Harry's past. Now, I would say that that bigger picture of the 2019 to 2022 isn't probably very far off of some of the people that we like to follow, of Scott Minard and some of those guys. They have said, hey, for the next couple of years, we look pretty good. But then after that, you've got to start looking for a recession, because the reality is our economy does go through cycles. So we will have another recession again. Right now, economic data doesn't say that we're on the cusp of a recession, but eventually that economic data is going to start changing and looking different. And at some point in the future, you are going to have that. The biggest thing is, like you said, for Harry to say 2018 is bad, and typically most of the reasons he tells you things are bad just don't really pan out in the investment world. Harry is excellent at demographic analysis. And that's very good for the retail industry, not just the retail, but they're the predominant
real estate.
Sure.
Lots of different things.
Of that to determine, right, what should we put more of on the shelves and things like that. Very good at that. But so far, him interpreting that demographic data and turning it into investment recommendations has been extremely poor. Matter of fact, he started a debt ETF fund that didn't last but about a year, year and a half, because it had extremely high internal expenses. It had extremely poor performance, so nobody sent any money into it. So eventually they had to shut it down. So, yeah, his predictions are wonderful when it comes to the demographics and the impacts of it, but his investment recommendations aren't so solid.
Well, you're right. If McDonald's wants to know whether they should sell or buy more chicken nuggets to sell or salads to sell, then Harry's your guy, because he'll tell you who should be over your store buying stuff. Hey, Hot Rod, as always, you did a great job, and I know you got a lot on your plate today, so we'll let you go, and I'll be seeing you bright and early in the morning. Of course, if folks are listening to this show on Thursday night, we'll get to hear Rod on Glass in the morning on Friday. If you're listening to it on Saturday morning, then you'll hear him on Monday morning at 7:20 sharp. So, Rod, we have a great weekend. I'll see you tomorrow, so no problem, but I'll talk to you later.
Sounds good, Dave. Have a wonderful show, and I'll see you in the morning.
All right, man. Talk to you later. Let's take a quick break, guys, when we come back. Doug had given me this piece from Sir John Templeton, a famous person in our industry, on just basic rules for investment success. And when I went through it for the first time, I thought, this is really good radio show stuff. So we're going to go through some of the basic rules for successful investing, try to elaborate on a few of these, but mainly just hitting them pretty fast and furious. So we'll be right back to go through those. This is Your Money with David Hayes. I thought Hot Rod had a raccoon running around his garage. He was calling from his garage or something. I don't know. I just saw him at the office just an hour ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't know what the heck's going on. Doug, you've been following.
Maybe a raccoon in the office. I don't know. That could be the
I'll tell you, back in, gosh, what year was it? I don't know. Our office was down on South Rogers Street, right there in front of the Hayes Court Apartments in that house. And I don't know what year we moved there, probably 96 or 98. But I do remember Rod and Ryan Pittner that worked at our office then.
Yeah.
They were scared to death of an animal that made it into the office, and it was a squirrel.
Really?
So you'll have to have Hot Rod tell you.
Hot Rod. The mighty Hot Rod was scared of a squirrel.
Now, I understand Pittner being scared, but not Hot Rod.
Rod Holloway?
Yeah, that squirrel chased them all over that office. So it could be a raccoon down on South College. I don't really know. You've been following Sir John Templeton and many others in the investment world for years.
Yes.
And you gave me this piece on basic rules for investment success. And I thought it was just really good, and maybe it could relate to a lot of people, because we are at these highs in the market. And these are the times where people make a lot of mistakes in investing. I think they make it in two areas. They make it when it's really high. They make it when it's really low. I've had many meetings with people that, back in 2007 and 8, once the market crashed, they said, oh, my gosh. Well, especially when all the pundits were saying, if you need any money at all in the next 5 years, get it all out. You know, again, we were saying back then what we should be saying today. It's all about time horizon. The money in the market should have time. So if it's money that Doug mentioned earlier in the show, if it's money you're going to need next year or even the next few years, yeah, it should never be in the market. So that wasn't just 2008. That's now. So that's the perspective. Duggar, the first thing that I saw, it talked about invest for maximum return. And they talk about real returns.
Real returns.
And one of your biggest topics is inflation.
Exactly. And, you know, David, people make this mistake. we talk to someone who lived through the 1970s, they remember, wow, CDs were paying 10 or 11 or 12%, and they really are excited about that. But they tend to forget that the inflation rate was much higher at that time, too.
Right.
So what
So
what a real return is, a real return is your return minus inflation. Okay, so if you had a 10% return and inflation was 2 or 2.5%, then you've had a real return of 7.5%.
And that's why bonds right now, if you went out and bought a 10-year bond, let's say at 2.3 or 2.4, and inflation is at 2 or maybe 3, then you could potentially lose money over that 10-year period of time.
That's right, and that's where people typically make mistakes in fixed income, or if they're on living on a fixed income or in fixed income investments, is they're not buying real return strategies to provide real returns over the cost of living or inflation. And so one of the things that John Templeton talks about, and by the way, a great investor in the 1950s, was one of the first people investing in Japan, tremendous history there. But one of the things he always talks about in every book you read of his and his philosophies is when you're investing, invest for maximum total real return. You want to do as well as you can over inflation, not just matching inflation or barely beating inflation, but maximum returns over real returns over inflation.
One of the other basic rules for investment success: don't trade or speculate. That's obviously true. We talk about that on the show. The other one, Doug, is remaining flexible and open-minded about types of investments. Remember,
yes,
you're not should not be down on things you aren't up on.
That's exactly right. And David, you know, we think back to 2008 when U.S. government bonds were actually positive when everything else was negative. And people might pull away from that and say, man, that's where I always want to be in the worst case scenarios. You just don't know what's going to react to what. And so wide diversification is typically the best way to be when you are positioning yourself for long-term investments, and you have to remain open-minded. I've had numbers of people say, I'll never be in stocks, or other people say, I'll never be in bonds, when the reality is you might be losing out on some return opportunities there, or at least some opportunities to, again, provide you with those maximum real returns.
Yeah, and I would say
portfolio,
not just investments, but remain open-minded about investment products as well.
Exactly.
There's a lot of really great products out there that will do some really cool things. Obviously, one of his other rules is buy low when you can. I mean, and that's just the opposite of what people tend to do. I always say that people want to buy more of stocks when they go up, more of real estate when they want to go up. When it goes down, they want to run out the door. So buy low when you can. And then also, don't buy on economic outlooks. Just buy on value. I mean, there's been times, Doug, in our careers where there's been an economic outlook that oil is going to be at 80 before the end of the year. So let's buy energy. And guess what? It was a bad idea. Or, you know, this or that's going to happen, so this, you should do this. And that was what we were kind of, you know, poking Harry about over here, is that he always invested based on economic outlook. You may be spot on the economic outlook and still wrong about the investment.
David, we've heard so many people talk about energy, as we'll leave that as one example: upstream, downstream, midstream. It's going to be the drillers. It's going to be the oil. It's going to be the shippers. And by the time it's all said and done,
on real estate, Maine and Maine.
By the time it's all said and done, it may be a portion of energy or a sleeve of something in these sectors that does well, but maybe not the whole thing. And if you don't pick that right, based on an outlook, then you could have a diminished return.
Absolutely. Here's another one of his successes, rules for successful investing. He says there's safety in numbers. You mentioned that. That means diversification. Hire wise experts to help you. Now, I was talking with some folks this morning about, when do you need help? Some people need help with asset allocation. Some people need help with keeping their feet to the fire. Some people don't. Some people can do that on their own. But when I think you really need help is when it gets to the point where you're trying to accumulate the right amount of money in the right type of buckets, whether it's taxable or tax-free, and certainly on the distribution side or the exit strategy when it comes to retirement. So definitely hiring wise experts to help you. And then another one would be monitor your investments, but don't like overmanage your investments. That's a rule for success. I say it's kind of like my smoker I got for Christmas. And by the way, I smoked a tip roast.
Really?
That was absolute my first time smoking. So I have a grill, traditional gas grill. I have the Big Green Egg, which is great, and you can do a lot of things on it. I have something called the Big Easy, which is an infrared cooker, kind of a greaseless turkey fryer looking thing, which it cooks a lot of different things really great, but I never had a true smoker. You could smoke a little bit on the green egg, but this is a true smoker.
True smoker.
So Santa brought me a smoker for Christmas. Thank you, Santa. And I smoked for New Year's Eve a tip roast. And I'd never done it before, but I marinated it for 2 days, and I put it on the smoker. I monitored it, but I didn't overmanage it. I wasn't always opening up the door. I wasn't moving the thermometer. I just let it cook. Remember, when you're looking, it ain't cooking. And it's a little bit like your investments, Duggar. If you're looking too much, sometimes it ain't cooking.
Exactly right. And, you know, we've seen and talked to so many people who back in the day were in day trading or swing trading, or that's not even nearly as frightening as the people who just all of a sudden, you know, are buying and selling, and selling, looking every week, trying to make. It's just very hard to do that. And to your point that you talked about in the very beginning of the program, David, about time in the market and missing the five best days and having the five worst days, it can be really, really changing in your overall portfolio.
Now, one of the other rules for successful investing, don't panic. Mm-hmm. Don't panic. And I would even say don't get too euphoric as well. Also, learning from your mistakes. Think back. I mean, think back to 2007 and 8 when you pulled the plug on your stocks because you were too scared. Or think back, not just on the investment side, when you quit putting money into your investments because they kept going down. I mean, I remember people saying, man, I'm putting good money after bad. No, you're putting good money exactly where you should be putting it at that time. And going back to one of his other principles, buy low when you can. The other thing is he mentions a very spiritual man. I put it in here. Mm-hmm. Beginning with prayer. I mean, beginning with prayer, just praying for peace, guidance, comfort,
clarity,
and you know, whether you believe in that or not, folks, I do, and I think Sir John Templeton certainly did as well, because some of these principles, these aren't 2018 principles, like you said, these are things he wrote back in the 50s.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of wisdom there.
Yes.
The other thing, more of just a tale, outperforming the market is a very difficult task. Now, a lot of you would say, why wouldn't you just be in the market then? Well, there's a lot of risk in the market. That's why you have bonds and real estate and you're in the market. But it is very difficult. And I also think that the media always, and I'm not trying to, you know, say there's fake news or that, you know, the media should be blamed for this, but when you only report the S&P 500, there's a lot of other places people put their money. That's large U.S. companies. That's both growth, that's both value, it's a whole mix of things. But what about folks that need more dividends? That's a whole different group of stocks. Or maybe there's companies that you just want growth, or maybe it's mid-cap or small-cap. I mean, I mentioned earlier the small-cap index, it's averaged about the same as the S&P 500 over the many, many years. But last year it did about, what, 14, I think I said, not 21. So, you know, it is difficult to outperform the market, but it can be done. But I just want to tell people that that's not what it's all about.
Right, right.
All right, Duggar, here's another one. An investor who has all of the answers, I love this one, and think about it, an investor who has all the answers doesn't even understand all the questions.
Exactly. And, well, you know, there's an old saying, David, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. And that's exactly what we're dealing with right here. We've met these folks. Believe it or not, we've met these folks.
I'm reminded when Wayne Thacker, we were having this discussion, folks, at the office one day about nerds in high school. And Doug says with a straight face, you know, guys, I don't remember ever having any nerds in high school. And Wayne real calmly said, Doug, if you don't think there were any nerds, it was probably
because you are the nerd. It's okay.
Thank goodness for thick skin.
Yes.
Oh, man, you're right. All right, here's the other thing. There's no free lunch. And, there's no free lunch. If things sound too good to be true, they probably are. Anything to add to that, Doug?
Well, just, you know, one of the things that we have always said is that it's easy to just believe a tip. And I just want to say this. You know, you just mentioned fake news and things like that. Folks, when you're online and you have these things pop up that say, this is the next Microsoft or this is the next whatever, just be aware that, and if maybe if you're working, there's a fax machine and it has a penny stock, folks, just beware. There is no such thing as a free lunch. No one is out there trying to tell you the next Microsoft on Yahoo Finance. Right. I just put it to you that way.
And lastly, he says, don't be too fearful or negative too often. So basically, boys and girls, shut your computers down, quit reading all the stories, like that Harry Dent report I just said, because fear will paralyze you, and you will miss out on so much opportunity. Control the things you can control. This is not Sir John Templeton. That's a David Hayes thing. Control the things you can control. Control the amount of money you save. Control the amount of debt you get into. Control the time that you're working. Those are the things that you can control. Control your behavior. That's about the only thing that you really can control. You can't control all this other stuff. And just be smart about where you are in your life, where your investments should be allocated, and allocate them, and be happy with the outcome. You know, too many people are just, you know, we change our attitudes on greed and fear when it comes to investments. You know, we're fearful of loss. We're fearful of missing out. You know, we're greedy. We want it more than what, you know, maybe we should be getting. And Duggar, that is something, that's one of the big, you know, seven deadly sins.
Right.
And you got to avoid that stuff when it comes to this investing.
You have to avoid it. Yeah, you have to be reasonable. As one investment professional said one time, you really need to be focused on your temperament, not on having a crystal ball.
One last thing on what we said earlier, on if you don't think that there were nerds in your school, then you were the nerd. We talked about our friend Pittner earlier, Ryan.
Ryan, yes.
I swear. And Ryan was bald at a pretty early age. And Ryan, I don't know if you listen to the show or not, and you're probably going to kill me about this, but he was staying outside my office one day, and we were talking about rejection. And I said, you know, I honestly don't, I'm sure I've been rejected many times. I said, mm-hmm. but I just do not remember ever being truly rejected. He said, Hayes, try shaving your head and asking someone out on a date, then you'll feel rejection. Like, all right, Ted, I'm sorry. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about this book that Doug gave me. It's called From Here to Security, How Workplace Savings Can Keep America's Promise. And this pretty much tells the tale of what we've been pounding the pavement on about trying to educate the employees on what they need to do to get to where they need to be. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. I'm telling you guys, if you work at our office, you better have some thick skin. That's all there is to it. That's why, you know, Doug,
always that way. There have been some new voices that have come in the last few years that have caused a little more turmoil.
Yeah, Wayne.
Some of us have had to adjust.
Wayne. Let me think of another one. Wayne.
Okay, yeah. Okay,
so I think it must be Wayne.
He could be a source, yes.
We might even let him come on the show again this year. I'm not real sure. Doug, we've been...
He did get kind of quiet towards the end of 2017.
Whenever you... we've been doing... So let's just back up. We were thinking about this for years, about how can you educate the employees of your company to do what they need to do to get where they need to be. Mm-hmm. And here are some of the problems. I go into my job, I'm a 20-something, 30, it doesn't make any difference. And the HR person handed you some stuff, fill this out, do this, do that. And by the way, we have a 401k plan, and do you want to be in it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know if I can afford to be in it, so I guess not. Or, hey, we have an auto enroll, so you're automatically going to be enrolled at 3%. So my young mind thinks, oh, well, that must be all I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
But this gentleman, Robert Reynolds, wrote a book, From Here to Security, How Workplace Savings Can Keep America's Promise. And I was reading through it last night, and it does a really good job of just putting it on the line that if we don't do something, then everyone's going to be paying for it.
Exactly.
I mean, you're going to be paying for not just their food and the shelter for people that haven't prepared. You're going to be paying for the rehabilitation for that knee replacement that they just had and that you just paid for. So there's just so much importance that go into this. And the bedrock of all this is Social Security. And again, going back to us talking, I think last week or week before, Social Security was always insurance for living too long. It wasn't ever meant to be your primary source of income, but yet many, many Americans rely on that for their sole income, and they're on, you know, reduced housing allowances or whatever. They have food stamps. They have all of these subsidies that are being entitlements that if we would do a good job of getting a hold of the generations that are my age and younger and say, this is what you need to do to get where you want to be, most of them will do it. Most of them will do it because they don't want to be poor when they get old.
Exactly.
But when you come into a workplace and you're just thrown into a plan and they're, you know, 3% of it must be what? I mean, we see that with school teachers. We see it with factory workers. We see it with young executives. It doesn't really make any difference. But, Doug, this is such an important topic. And I'm telling you what, if you run a company, if you're an HR person, it just takes one person. My Aunt Jane was head of HR at RCA. She's my great aunt Jane, my grandma's sister. And when I first got in the business in the 90s, people would come to me and they would bring me their statements and they would say, if it wasn't for your Aunt Jane, I wouldn't have this. And what do you mean? Well, she would say to me, you need to put this much money in this plan. And they would say, well, I can't afford it. And she would say, you can't afford not to. And she just would convince them to do it or almost browbeat them into doing it. And, you know, people are like most people. Once you do something, you rarely go back and undo it.
Right.
So the just the inertia of doing it helped. So they had all this money because one person said, you need to do it. We've had people like Kevin in our office who's told people at General Motors, you need to do it. We've had many stories like that, that you work at a place and you have a young person come in, you need to do this. We just had a new young person start at our office. She was filling out her paperwork. I'm walking by and I go, 10%, 10%. She goes, why? And I go, put 10% in.
Yes, absolutely.
And no excuses. Put 10% in. At 25, 26, 27 years old with a little bit of a match, I mean, they'll get somewhere someday.
Absolutely. And, you know, the reality is when you start at any age, anything you can put back is good. But when you start at a younger age, like someone you were just describing, and doing 10% right out of the gate, it just makes a difference. And over time, you know, you become more associated with what retirement planning looks like. One of the things that's happened in the previous generation, I would say, is that people understood exactly when they were going to retire because they knew exactly when the pension was going to happen. Right. They understood everything. Now that the new view of retirement out here means that you're going to change jobs a few times, you don't know exactly when you're going to retire, you don't know what it's going to cost, there's all kinds of things going on. The earlier you get involved and the more intimately you're involved with all the planning aspects, or at least half of those aspects, you're going to do much, much better.
The baby boom generation was the first one that entered this yo-yo world. You're on your own. Their parents had pensions. So when the young baby boomers entered the market workplace, their parents didn't have the knowledge to say, hey, you need to start saving in this plan. Now, a lot of these plans didn't come out until the 80s or so, but still, I mean, that's a long time ago. Most of them were baby boomers. What I'm finding now, though, Doug, is that the baby boomers are saying to their kids as they're coming into the workforce, you have to do this. You have to do it, because the experience that I had was I should have done it earlier. I should have done it more often, and I didn't know it. But I'm telling you right now, you have to do it. All right, guys, we've got to take another break. Running a little bit late. When we come back, the Roth IRA turns 20. It's certainly coming of age. We'll talk about that and more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Duggar, the Roth IRA turned 20 this year. And I know a senator by the last name of Roth.
Charles Roth, Charles from Delaware. Roth,
he was the one that introduced the bill along with some other guy, but he didn't get the credit, I guess, on the bill. Pay tax on the seed, not the harvest. Create tax diversification. It's one of the only vehicles out. There's only a couple where you can put away money and it grow tax-free. And when you take it out, it's tax-free. There's just not very many vehicles out there. The HSA is a really good one because you put it in pre-tax, take it out tax-free, but you're limited quite a bit there. Some life insurance cash values. But the Roth is it, Doug, and that is the one that more and more people need to be taking advantage of. Off air, we were talking with Rob about, you know, he said, you guys hit it home that no one told me how much to put away. And he brought up something else that millennials in particular, and a lot of people, switch jobs. In fact, many of them switch jobs multiple times before they ever get to the point where they've settled in. And each time they left money in an old 401k. Well, most 401ks, if you don't have a lot of money in it, they don't want to record keep it. They don't want, so they say if it's less than $2,500, if you don't do anything with it, and by the way, no one tells you what to do with it, so you have to know this, they're just going to send you a check. And that means at 25 or 30 years old, it's a 10% penalty for early distribution, so you have to pay the penalty, you got to pay the taxes, you got to pay all the fee, whatever it might be. And as Rob put it, you end up with $100 in your pocket, so you go out to dinner on it. But then you start all over again. And that's the problem. So each time that you leave a job, you've got to take that money and wisely either move it to the new plan or move it into an IRA or do something smart with it.
Absolutely. And it's one of the things, again, I go back to, the more intimate you become with and the better knowledge you have of the retirement planning process, the better off you're going to be. And that's an easy one. If you have an old 401k, you know, it's an accumulation vehicle while you're there, but when you're not there accumulating, they'd rather see it move along. So,
For sure. A couple things on the Roth. Just want to encourage people to know as much as they possibly can about this, that a lot of people have the ability to put Roth 401k contributions in. I want to continue to encourage you to do that. Maybe do some in-plan Roth conversions. The history of the Roth is really fascinating. I don't have time to go over it, but all the way back, again, 20 years ago to today, on just the expansion of it, the opportunities that you have now that you didn't have before. I think over the next few years, and I said last week when these tax reform or when these tax rates expire, I said, I actually made my son listen to this part of the show. I said that when they expire January 1 of 2016, it's obviously 2026. It's not 2016. So we have a window of opportunity here for the next few years to take advantage of historically low tax rates. Why would you ever put money away tax deferred into a very low tax rate today to pull it out at a very high or unknown tax rate later? I just don't get it. So be smart about it. Continue to listen to the show. Hopefully over time we'll encourage you and inspire you to do what you know you need to be doing. So Duggar, let's take another quick break. When we come back from a short segment, this is Your Money with David Hayes. Don't forget, folks, if you missed any of the show on Thursday night, you can always listen on Saturday morning at 9, of course, right after the Bloomington Review, which, by the way, we may make a quick cameo on to our old friend Jim. And then also, I'm working on getting Ed Slott on the show. It's questionable. I've been leaving next week's slot open for Slott, no pun intended, right up your alley, Doug. Yeah. I know that. Doug is the king of puns, just so you know.
Got to have a creative mind. Maybe a nerd mind, but creative mind.
He's the king of puns, and it's always fun. But yeah, hopefully we get Ed on. If we don't, you know, we'll actually mix it up a little bit next week and have something good for you. And anyway, Doug, your year off to a good start?
Absolutely. Just really excited. You know, we haven't mentioned it, but today the Dow Jones did cross 25,000. Even more interestingly, though, the NASDAQ, David, crossed 7,000. And we can remember in our careers when it hit 5,000 back in 99 and went all the way down to 2,000 and took 15 years to get back to 5,000. And now here we are at 7,000, just a couple of years.
It can happen really, really, really quick. And it can go both ways really, really quick.
That's the whole point of the I hope everyone goes back and listens to the 16 Rules of Investing Success we talked about and Rod Holloway's commentary earlier in the program, because it could come back just as quickly as it has gone.
Yeah, if you didn't hear that, you want to go back and listen to it. Also, iTunes, go over there and subscribe. You can head over to Google Play Music and listen to our podcast there as well. So listen, folks, there's a lot of good stuff out there. And go back and listen to old shows, too. I mean, I don't do it, but you might want to. I had a person that told me they did a binge listening of Your Money with David Hayes, and they really kind of got them through the day at work. And they learned a lot and had some fun. So that's what it's about, having fun, learning, laughing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, maybe even crying a little bit.
Maybe.
At least not today, we didn't cry.
Not today.
Maybe after,
the show. It started out kind of cool with that ice fishing story. That was that might have got everyone a little bit frosty.
Exactly. Hey, we appreciate everybody listening. We hope you enjoyed today's program. And again, we'll be back here live with you on Thursday night next week, hopefully with Ed Slott, the country's IRA expert. But we'll see if he isn't able to join us. We'll have another great show for you. Have a great week, everyone. Goodbye. The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.